today marks 10 years since the apology to the Stolen Generations by the then Prime Minister Kevin Rudd. It's also a decade since the Closing the Gap strategy was launched, with more targets still falling well short. Labor Senator Pat Dodson was the chair of the Council for Aboriginal Reconciliation when the Bringing Them Home report on the Stolen Generation was handed down in 1997. He's now the Shadow Assistant Minister for Indigenous Affairs, and he's also my guest tonight. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
10 years ago, of course, today, the apology to the Stolen Generations was delivered. What are your personal memories of that day?
It was a day of mixed emotions. The fact that it was happening was a bit incredulous, given the denial by Howard for so many years. And the fact that so many of our people came and were very moved by it, and I thought it was a grand thing. I happened to be sitting next to a lady who'd been taken away off the railway lines and across the Nullarbor and put into a terrible mission in Western Australia called Rowlings, and her son had been killed at Canning Vale. So it had that effect that the people who had been directly affected by these policies, by the things that happened to them, at last the Australian government acknowledged the hurt and the injustice and the pain that they'd suffered. So it wasn't everything, but it was a huge admission.
Labor has announced that it will legislate an Indigenous voice to Parliament. How would that voice work? What would it be tasked with?
Well, it's obviously a matter that has to be worked out with the Indigenous leadership. That's what the request from Uluru was about, is to sit down with the government, work out what the functions might be and the powers and how the representation and all of those matters. So we wouldn't be just working in isolation. We'd be collaborating and talking to Indigenous peoples, First Nations peoples, as to how they see it working, what functions they'd like to see it, how it would be balanced between regional and national sorts of functionalities, and particularly, what kind of scope they'd like to see their participation to be around.
But it's quite different, isn't it, to a constitutionally enshrined body? I know some of the people involved with the Uluru Statement from the Heart are disappointed. They don't want to see a legislated body. They want to change the constitution. What do you say to those people who are so disappointed?
Well, clearly it's legislation. It's not that different from what Uluru said, actually. Uluru said they wanted an entrenched head of power for a voice to the parliament, so that's one matter. But then they said they would work out the details of the legislation that would constitute the voice. So obviously a referendum to change the constitution is a different matter than legislation going through parliament, which is in the hands of parliament. But there's a lot of, they're not mutually exclusive matters.
So you think that it's quite different though, isn't it, than having it in the constitution, because you can also abolish it. I mean, just like what happened with ATSIC. I mean, we've got sort of a model in history here.
Well, that's hence why the people want a head of power entrenched in the constitution. I mean, that's clearly why people want a power entrenched in the constitution. So, but legislation and constitutional entrenchment are different things. There's no doubt about it. And even if you were, even with a head of power, it could still be abolished by government. So there's no guarantee that governments would even have to set it up, in a sense, if there was a head of power.
So this is a commitment Labor has now made to legislate for this body, given, of course, you need some bipartisan support, most people know this, to be able to change the constitution. But last night I had Nigel Scullion on. He's the Indigenous Affairs Minister, for those who didn't hear the interview. And he said that there was a contradiction because, you know, you've also agreed to this Joint Standing Committee on Indigenous Affairs to look at what to do with the Uluru Statement, but you've promised to legislate a body. He says you're not really consulting because you've made a promise already. What do you say to that critique?
Well, firstly, we haven't agreed. We've agreed to have discussions about it, about a joint House committee, and we're in the process of trying to settle the terms that it would have to govern its operation. So there's this notion of a joint House committee to look at both the and this is where the difference lie at the moment, either at the referendum question or at a legislated outcome, or both. So that's the discussion going on at the moment. Now, the party, the Joint House Committee, has got a range of information before it already. It's got the expert panel report from 2012. It's got the expert. It's got the report from the Constitution Reference Committee that was set up at, that responded to Uluru. And then it's got the Uluru stuff, and then it's got a Joint House Committee report already. So there's a range of information that's about. The difficulty with a Joint House Committee is that it will go back and ask the Indigenous people, what do they want? And they've already told the Parliament what they want, and there was, you know, just dismissed by the government. That's the sad part about it. If the government had sat down and talked to the people out of Uluru and the leadership at that time and asked about the sorts of questions that they've assumed answers to, we may be in a different position. But they didn't do that. They just unilaterally dismissed what was put forward and said it was going to be too hard. So that's still their position.
I know you're in the Senate, but the Prime Minister explained why he opposed this body enshrined in the Constitution in the Parliament, in the lower house today. And he used pretty strong language about why he was opposed. In fact, really arguing that it was a terrible idea that he didn't support at all. Now, I know some Indigenous people say that, you know, he also claimed that, you know, he rejected it and told people early on in the process, the referendum council, that he wasn't in favour of the idea. But I know some people on the referendum council contest that. They say he didn't do that. What's your view of what happened there in terms of the timeline?
Oh, look, I think what happened, and Bill Shorten made this very clear, that there are a lot of people in the Parliament who are taken a bit aback by what came forward from Uluru, and as well as from the referendum council report, because they made basically two recommendations: one, that there be an entrenchment in the constitution, and a statement. But I think it was the entrenchment question that took most of the Parliament by surprise, and I think, in fairness to the Prime Minister, I think he was fairly apprehensive about referendums because of his own experience with the Republic. So he's often seen the sad state of the referendum on the Republic as the benchmark, and he's been cautious ever since. And I've been at meetings where he's made that part of his response.
Your Labor colleague, Linda Burney, has questioned the legitimacy of this year's Closing the Gap figures. What's your view? Are you also concerned about the legitimacy, the data behind it?
Well, it's a bit hard to interpret, I must say. I mean, you know, if there are four out of the seven goals that they're making good progress on, it's not unilaterally, or it's not uniformly happening, or it doesn't appear to be uniformly happening. Maybe one state or another is moving ahead and lifting the average up, as it were. The fact that there is some good things happening, it's certainly not where we want to be. I've said to Nigel Scullion, the minister, that he really has to put an outboard motor with a turbocharger on it if he's going to get any real results by next year.
How should they do that? How could you turbocharge this? I mean, his answer is, and I've quizzed him on it, it takes a really long time to get results. It takes a really long time to see change.
Oh, look, it doesn't really. It takes commitment, it takes dedication, and it takes persistence. And, of course, it does take the participation. And I think the government's record that they've put forward on the business areas is promising and interesting. But there's the same record that's come forward from the community councils in Queensland about the housing, the remote housing strategy. Now, the government can't walk away from that particular strategy and hope that there's going to be progress, because if you don't have housing, which is essential to all those other indicators that detract from the quality of life for Indigenous peoples, then we're in serious trouble.
Of course, today is 10 years since Kevin Rudd apologised to the Stolen Generations. You met with many of those people today, many of those people who've travelled from across the country for this commemoration today. What was your feeling? What's the mood among all those people?
Oh, look, I think people, they're very gracious and they're very magnanimous. But they also have a sense that there's been a deep, deep chasm in their life that really hasn't healed. But the apology was part of a pathway towards that. But there is a sense of great loss here, and that it hasn't there hasn't been any real satisfaction because of the other appalling things we've been talking about in terms of the closed gap matters. And the whole fact that we have, you know, nearly 17,000 Aboriginal kids in out-of-home care is not a very big, it's not a very nice picture. And there are many factors for that. So many of these people don't see change to the upside of their lives and they don't see the quality of that life having been improved. You've got measures in some parts of the country on the basic card, welfare control. You still have CDP control. People don't see the change to the better happening uniformly or unilaterally across the plateau, and they're still seeing injustices by the young people being taken into custody, and now you're seeing the rates of increases for women going into incarceration. So there are many things that have to happen. The small gains, the microscopic changes that have happened, I think, cause for some recognition, but it's not enough.
Just a final question on a completely different topic, but to be honest, the biggest topic that the federal parliament and probably the country has been talking about in the last couple of days. Former Nationals leader Warren Truss has told the ABC's 7:30 that Barnaby Joyce has undoubtedly been diminished by the fallout from his affair and that the issue needs to be resolved. Do you think Barnaby Joyce's position is now untenable?
Oh, look, I think Barnaby's got a whole range of people chasing him around the flat on that question. If there's been misuse of public sector monies, Bronwyn Bishop got into trouble for using a helicopter. If there's been misuse by Mr. Joyce of the public sector day, then, you know, that's a serious matter.
Do you think there's any evidence of that yet?
I'm not across those details.
Pat Dodson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That's Senator Pat Dodson. He's the Shadow Assistant Minister for Indigenous Affairs and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders. And of course, today is the 10th anniversary since Kevin Rudd apologised to the Stolen Generations. Very soon on RN Drive, we're going to talk to two people who are members of the Stolen Generation about their personal experience, about remembering that apology, about how their lives have changed since. Two survivors of the Stolen Generations joining us in about 10 minutes here on RN Drive.